licked his lips, clenched his fists, and resisted the urge to pace up and down. Might make the crew nervous, he thought. Still, a quick trip to the toilet won't bother anybody. The blockhouse lavatory was no bigger than a closet, its walls thin plywood. Dan could hear the countdown clicking inexorably along. He came out as one of the launch teams sang out, "Internal power on! Confirm internal power. T-minus 2 minutes, umbilical disconnect." The cables dropped away from the booster and rocket plane. "Okay," Dan said to himself. "It's all on automatic from here on." He clasped his hands behind his back and crossed the fingers of both hands. The automatic sequencer was counting off seconds now. Dan held his breath. 5, 4. "All systems go. 2, 1. Ignition." A bloom of fire flared at the base of the booster, and for an agonizingly long moment the big rocket stood unmoving, belching flame from its tail. Then it started to rise, slowly, slowly, like a sedate monarch rising from his throne. "Go, baby!" somebody shouted. "Up, up, and away!" The sound started to roll over them now, thundering waves of raw power reverberating through the blockhouse, rattling the bones and guts deep inside. Dan felt as if he were inside some enormous musical instrument with the whole bass register bellowing away madly. The wall screen showed a billowing cloud of gritty gray smoke. Dan heard, "Pitch maneuver confirmed. She's on her way." The launch director pushed his wheeled chair back, yanked off his headset, and got to his feet. "Come on, boss. Let's go out and take a look." Dan followed the heavyset launch director out into the bright morning sunshine and squinted up at the smoky trail of the booster's exhaust, starting to kink slightly where the higher altitude winds pushed it. A bright flash of light startled Dan for an instant, until he realized it was the space plane's rocket engine lighting off. From inside the blockhouse they heard, "Separation confirmed. Space plane engine ignition confirmed." The launch director gave Dan a lopsided grin. "Okay. My workday's finished. I think I'll take my crew down to the motel and have a few beers." Matagorda Island, Texas. Dan had never seen Kinski so worked up. He had driven from the blockhouse back to Hangar A in the beat-up Chevy and rushed upstairs to his office, intent on calling Lynn Van Buren at the Caracas airport. But he saw from the expression on April's face that trouble was brewing. Before he could ask, she said in an urgent whisper, "Lynn's in your office." "Right," Dan said, remembering that he had told the public relations director to wait for him. "I'll handle it." April gave him an "I hope so" expression as he opened the door and stepped into his office. Kinski was at the window, his shirt rumpled, his hair disheveled, his face blotchy red with anger. He whirled to face Dan.
"You launched it! Without telling me!"
Dan went to his desk but remained standing. "I didn't tell anybody except the launch crew."
"That's the dumbest goddamn thing I ever heard of!"
"Lynn, don't take it personally. I wanted to keep this as tight as possible so nobody from the government could step in and stop me."
"They're going to step in now, you crazy bastard!"
"I might be crazy," Dan said calmly, trying to lighten up the mood. "But my parents had been married for years before I arrived." Kinski was not placated.
"This is a fucking disaster. You can't go firing rockets off whenever you want to."
Dan sat in his desk chair and tilted back slightly. "Lynn, you're my PR director, not my boss."
"What happens when the plane cracks up? You'll be finished, wiped out."
"It's not going to crack up. And there's nobody in the plane. She's flying on automatic."
"How are you going to land it, then?"
"On automatic. If we need to, we can control her remotely for the landing." Kinski paced across the office, shaking his head. "She's not landing here," Dan said. "We won't have any trouble with the FAA about clearing airspace, if that's what's worrying you."
"You should have told me, Dan. I'm supposed to know these things."
"I didn't tell anybody except the launch team," Dan repeated. "Hell, even the service crew didn't know we were going to launch her. I told them this would be a static test."
"I should have been told," Kinski muttered, still pacing. "How's it look? Your PR director being kept in the dark. Nobody will believe that. They won't believe I didn't know.
Lynn, it's on my head, not yours.
the hell it is. They're going to lean on me. People expect me to know, Dan. I get paid to know.
You get paid to handle public relations for Astro Manufacturing Corporation. Dan tried to smile. I think I've just handed you the juiciest news story of your career, Lynn. You'll have the media crawling all over you in a couple of hours.
The hell I will, Kinski growled. He stopped his pacing and glared at Dan. I quit. I'm getting out of here.
Stunned, Dan heard himself say, You can't quit. I need you more than...
I quit! Kinski shouted. I'm out of here!
You're going back to New York?
No! It's none of your business where I'm going.
He banged the door open and practically ran out of Dan's office and past April's desk. Sitting with his mouth hanging open, Dan could hear the clanging of his footsteps echoing off the hangar walls out there. April appeared in the doorway, looking apprehensive. What in the 9 billion names of God got into him? Dan asked, puzzled. April shrugged.
Are you all right?
Yeah, sure, Dan said, still bewildered at Kinski's rage. With a shake of his head, he thought that Len would probably come back once he'd cooled off. I've got to talk to Van Buren in Caracas, he said to April, returning to business. No interruptions while I'm on the horn with her. April nodded and returned to her desk. She saw Dan's private phone line light up at the desktop phone console. Picking up her own phone, she quick-dialed her home number, hoping that Kelly hadn't gone out. Kelly Emmons was sitting on the unmade sofa bed in the living room of April's apartment, arguing with her partner Chavez on her cell phone.
You've got to get back here, Kelly. The brass upstairs wants you back in the office pronto.
We're getting close to a break, Nacho. I can feel it.
Chavez's image in the tiny cell phone screen looked like a darkening thundercloud, though his voice was quietly intense.
You know what I'm feeling? I'm feeling the hot breath from all the way upstairs right on the back of my neck.
Hold them off for a few more days.
We don't have a few more days. Upstairs wants you back here in the office. They say there's no budget for field work on this case.
Nacho, there's something going on here. Really, there is.
You've got to get back here, Kelly. No fooling, kid.
Give me 2 more days.
I can't give you anything.
Tomorrow, then.
Today. I need to see your smiling face here in the office before close of business today. Comprende?
The apartment phone rang. Saved by the bell, Emmons thought.
I've got to run, Nacho.
You damned well better be running back here, partner. You're making me look bad, you know.
Right. See ya.
Emmons clicked the cell phone off with her thumb and picked up the phone from the table beside the sofa bed.
Kelly?
April's voice. She swiftly told the FBI agent of Kinski's nearly hysterical shouting at Dan.
He said he's leaving, quitting the company.
Emmons thought a moment, then asked,
How deep do you want to get into this? What do you mean?
April asked. Shifting the phone to her other ear, Emmons replied,
Are you willing to call Kinski? Are you willing to go over to his apartment?
Roberto saw that some kid had scrawled Wash Me across the dust-covered back doors of the panel truck he was using. With a sullen growl, he pulled the checkered bandana from the back pocket of his coveralls and erased the graffito. Better to have a clean spot. Somebody might remember a Wash Me message. Identify the truck, maybe.
Inconspicuous.
Roberto tried to stay as inconspicuous as possible. His size worked against him. But he wore a workman's frayed coveralls and drove an ordinary pickup truck. Just another Hispanic working man, as far as anyone could tell. The region was full of Latinos, greasers, spics, dark-skinned men with mustaches and sad brown eyes, old before their time because they had to do the shit jobs that the Anglos wouldn't touch. Roberto seethed with anger as he drove southwest out of Houston. The multi-lane expressway petered into U.S. 59, a dual-lane highway as far as Victoria, where he would turn off onto Route 77. He kept to the speed limit. No sense getting picked up by some Texas highway patrolman who'd like nothing better than to run in a Latino ex-con. Cars, buses, even semi-rigs roared past him. Roberto snarled inwardly at the rich guys in their fancy convertibles and sports coupes. A blonde woman in a silver BMW zipped past him,
chattering away on the cell phone she had plastered.